This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, good evening and welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. We'd love to connect with you here in hour number two. Join us at Twitter at eRadio Sports. You can always go to our podcast page at podcastarena.com. Well, happy Memorial Day weekend. We are so excited to have back with us in hour number two. That is the senior writer with OU Insider, James Hale, as our college football conversation continues. Good evening, James. Nice to have you with us. You got big plans this weekend?
You know, I'm not much of a Memorial Day. I mean, I don't have a boat or a lake or anything.
You're not a fisherman?
I own like you do, or an ocean I can go to. And you know, you own the ocean too, which you need to make sure that ice stays frozen in Antarctica. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to make sure that happens to you. So, of course, if you show up, you're so hot, you would melt it.
Oh,
so
wow.
We need to keep
wow.
you away from there. So, you know, but. What I get to do on Memorial Day weekend is watch a bunch of sports. I get to play with my grandson,
Yay.
So things will be good.
That's fantastic. Well, I tell you what,
and I watch some great softball, by the way.
I mean,
the Sooners in the Super Regional, so that's going to be fun. And I'm a big softball fan. As you know, I love women's sports. I watched you, covered you at OU, and those elbows were great. You were a tremendous player.
Uh-huh.
And I know you don't hurt your producer or anything now, you know, but always tell your boys, man, don't make your mom mad because she'll come at you with those elbows, man.
So talk to me about how is Patty Gasso doing? What season is this for her that she's been in Oklahoma?
You would ask me numbers like that. It's
been 20
whatever,
years,
right?
At least, right?
I think she's been there as long as Bob Stoops, so I'm going to say 19.
Okay.
I mean, and she's made the NCAA tournament every time. I think she's the best softball coach in the country, but there's so many good ones, but I'll take Patty against anybody. She's recruiting like Barry Switzer used to recruit. Okay, you got Billy Sims. I'm going to go find a running back better than Billy Sims. And, you know, and that's what he sold it on. He sold 15 running backs coming in and said, all of you can win the Heisman Trophy. Well, that's what Patty's doing. Every year she seems to bring in a class that's anywhere from 1 to 5, and she seems to bring in, you know, back-to-back years, the number one pitcher in the country or whatever. And so here they are. They're going to the Super Regionals. They're at Auburn. They're upset because they didn't get a number 8 seed. Well, go prove it now. Go to Auburn. Beat a team that has a number 8 seed. You played them last year in an epic national championship series, won by Oklahoma 2-1. The two teams played in the opening game. Now, how about this opening up? I think they were in Cancun or in the Dominican or somewhere, E, and you and I should have been there so I could have seen you in your bikini out
oh,
there.
Oh, my.
And, you know, but, you know, that's pretty cool. But Auburn beat them, I think, 3-2, if I remember correctly, or 4-3. It was one of those kind of games. And so now they get a chance to, you know, to play another 3-game series against two teams that both feel like they should be in the national tournament.
And Patty Gasso is head coach in her time at Oklahoma. You're saying 19 years. She has led the Sooners to 2 national championships, correct?
3.
3. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, she's won 3 now, and it's been pretty amazing, you know, that, you know, how good Oklahoma has been. And, you know, Oklahoma branched out from the West Coast. Remember, with the West Coast early was dominating. The powers at Washington, Arizona, Washington State, Arizona State, you know, UCLA. Gosh, how could I leave out UCLA? All those great teams.
Mm-hmm.
And then Oklahoma was one of the first schools to prove you could win somewhere else beside the West Coast. And Patty, a California girl, went out and recruited great talent from the West Coast. But her first national championship team in 2000 was one with Oklahoma and Texas girls. And a great shortstop, Lisa Carey from Kansas. And that team kind of broke the cycle and won the national title behind the great Jennifer Stewart, a little left-hander that, you know, threw about, I don't know, 55, which is not hard in softball, but more she could throw 5 or 6 different pitches and she could paint the corners and she was great and she's up on the outfield fence right now. You can see that left-hander throwing that. And, boy, Patty's made a run with these left-handed pitchers, and they've all been really, really good. And And then she won with the great Lauren Chamberlain, the home run queen, you know, back in, what, 3 years ago, 2 years ago? And then, of course, they won last year with almost a freshman-sophomore team with an All-American Erin Miller, who's now working for ESPN. You know, she's, you know, they won the national title last year. So Patty's done it with different styles, different teams. And now she's going back to a super regional again.
You talk about how she's changed up her recruiting approach and style, but what do you think has been the key to her sustained success? Just her flexibility? Is that what I hear you saying?
Well, flexibility, but she, you know, she's a recruiting domino. She has been able to go out and recruit some of the better players in the country, and they've really picked it up a notch now in the last 4 or 5 years by bringing in these classes. Now, that may also be due, it's the first time that people are actually rating these classes, right? Sometimes it comes down to that. Patty's always gone out and been able to recruit great classes, you know. But when she was able to get out to California, that's where she brought in Lauren Chamberlain, and that's where she's brought in a number of these players. She's always recruited Kansas very well. I mentioned Lisa Carey, but, you know, Paige Parker, their star pitcher right now, is from the state of Kansas. And so she's just been able to go out and sell the program, and she's done it without a great facility at OU. OU's got plans to build a great facility, but, you know, they've never really had the money to do that. They put all their resources into football, and yet Patty's won anyway, even though the SEC has really built some great facilities for their programs, and some of these other teams have some facilities that are better than OU's. But the fans come out. They sell out just about every game. They're really behind this team. The team's really engaged with their fans. And Patty's just built a culture that a lot of teams in a lot of sports should try to copy. They believe they're going to win. They never think they're out of a game. They enjoy working with the fans and dealing with the fans. When girls graduate, it's an emotional deal. With all the fans saluting the player, it's pretty cool what happens. And, you know, they've been able to win 3 national championships, and they're going back to that super regional again. So they are on their way, and we'll see if they can get past Auburn.
You're listening to the voice of the senior writer with OU Insider. That is James Hale, who is back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. And speaking of national championships, talk to me about the Oklahoma Sooners. I had a bit of a panic attack when I saw a headline about Bob Stoops perhaps planning his exit from Oklahoma. Is this true or false? Should we be having some anxiety as Sooner fans?
Well, you know, I haven't really seen that article. I don't know what that is. And, what you know, I mean, planning their exit, where, you know, I mean, why would he be planning an exit? Is it because Lincoln Riley got a 3-year contract? You know, they did the contract because Lincoln deserved a 3-year contract, having one of the best offenses in college football, and Joe Castiglione being proactive and being aggressive, locking up a offensive coordinator who wasn't trying to leave anyway, but they just wanted to let him know, hey, we love you, man. 3-year contract, $1.3 million. When anybody calls you, you know, about being an offensive coordinator anywhere else, or, you know, one of those mid-majors or one of those low majors or Division IIs wants you to be a head coach, don't even take the phone call. And he won't. He doesn't want to leave anyway. So I don't know if that's what fueled that or what people are talking about there. You know, Bob has been there 19 years. Now, his sons will be seniors this year. And they're both good enough to play at OU. They've developed, especially Drake, into D1 prospects. Drake is an inside receiver that has proven that he's good enough to play anywhere he wants to play. Isaac is not quite as athletic, but is a solid safety. Probably reminds Bob and Mike, you know, Mike Stoops, Bob's brother, of them when they played. Now, Mike was a pretty good athlete. Bob, you know, became a good athlete and a good player. Why? Because he was smarter than everybody, learned the defense better than everybody. Mike was good enough athletically, if he didn't get hurt, to play in the NFL. You know, but my point is that Isaac's built like his dad a little bit. And you know, so it's going to be interesting. Drake is so good, I can't imagine OU not recruiting him and not trying to get him to come to OU. And, you know, so that's going to be interesting to see. Well, if that happens, then it's at least 5 years down the road, and that's not planning an exit. You know, that's still coaching, and when he decides to get out, to get out. But I don't think he has any plans to get out, as far as I know.
Do they go to Norman High? Where do they go to high school at?
They go to Norman North.
Ah,
and Norman North's been a really good program since they've been there. It's not just been because of the Stoops brothers, but they've certainly played a key role in that. And when Trey Young was starring on the Norman North basketball team, Drake was kind of a sidekick and took advantage of some of those great passes that Trey Young was giving out to people and things like that. So, You know, they've been really, really good. And again, I don't hear any talk about them coming to OU or OU even recruiting them. Bob doesn't want to talk about it. The kids don't talk about recruiting. I will just be shocked if Drake, who's good enough to go to UCLA, USC, anywhere, doesn't come to pass-happy Oklahoma or balanced offense with a great passing attack OU and be a slot receiver at OU. Maybe they don't want to go through that pressure, but they've been around OU all the time. I mean, forever. They come to the OU camp. I've watched them as seventh graders go up against high school kids because Uncle Mike makes us go up against those guys. And, you know, so and they'd get run over, and Mike would pick him up and go, get him again. Go up against him again.
The college football conversation continues with James Hale, the senior writer with OU Insider, after this quick commercial break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night. We'd love to hear from you. We are interactive. Join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports, and you can always go back and listen to all of our amazing guests tonight on our program at podcastarena.com. Right now, we are zeroing in on the Big 12 Conference, specifically the Oklahoma Sooners, with James Hale, the senior writer with OU Insider and host of Total Sports on KREF in Norman, Oklahoma. Hey, Coach Stoops and his beautiful wife, Carol, I know they have three kids, so does his daughter, is she involved in sports as well?
No, she's not, and I think she's at OU, but no, she's not at sports. I never really heard about her playing sports. So, but the two boys do, and they're twins. Fortunately, Isaac always has a beard, and Drake doesn't. I never tell them apart.
Right.
And people say, well, if you're around them enough, they act different. Well, I'm not around them enough, and, you know, and they don't always dress the same either, so... But they look alike. They really do. I mean, they're identical twins.
Senior writer with OU Insider James Hale back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We love when he is on the program. Last time you were on the show, we ran out of time. We didn't have a chance to break down Oklahoma's spring game. So what was your biggest takeaway after watching it?
That Kyler Murray's pretty good. You know, he started at Texas A&M with Kyle Allen. That was a weird thing. It's probably one of those things Kevin Sumlin wishes he nobody would ever ask him about. He has two blue chippers and doesn't have either one of them now. And so Oklahoma was the benefactor of having Kyler Murray, who really had a great spring. But so did Austin Kendall. And if they had to make a decision tomorrow, boy, that would be tough for them. I think Kyler would probably get the call, but I don't know that for sure. So their quarterback's strong right now. Wide receivers, Jeffrey Mead had a pretty good spring coming off an end of the year where he played pretty well. At running back, they have four or five guys. All of them stand out. Rodney Anderson wasn't allowed to get tackled, but I think Rodney will be the starter. You know, he's had a couple of freak injuries, a knee injury, and then he had a neck injury. And, you know, so they've been cautious with him. But, boy, he's big and strong and fast, and they had him return a kick return, and we didn't know really that was him back there. And he's taken off, and we're wondering if the defense is supposed to tackle him. A couple of guys acted like they were, and a couple of guys didn't. He stiffed on a couple of guys, and he scored, you know, but he's pretty good. So offensively, with Baker Mayfield back, you know, you figure you're going to be really good again, and they probably are. I mean, Baker's really, really good. He's maybe the best in the country. He had that mishap in Arkansas that hasn't slowed him down, being a team leader. So they look pretty good. Defensively, I think they're going to be better, E. They brought in some new linebackers, and they have more linebacker depth with quality guys that are linebackers. Kenneth Murray's a freshman out of Texas that has been outstanding. John Michael Terry's out of Tulsa that redshirted last year. That's 6'4", 242 pounds, and he might be the starting middle backer. Caleb Kelly's going into a sophomore year. Oboe has turned into one of the best pass-rushing defensive ends in the country. The secondary is going to be better. I think Will Sunderland, now starting at strong safety, is going to be a better cover guy than Ahmad Thomas. Stephen Parker's back for his senior year. Jordan Thomas is back for their senior year. Jordan Parker got hurt, but Parnell Motley really stepped up as a sophomore and looked like he's actually as good or a better player. So I think they're going to be better there. Maybe the Achilles heel will be depth in the defensive line. They had a couple of guys turn them down that could have transferred in for their senior year. They're going to count on a couple of freshmen that have enough size to come in and help them. And their frontline talent, I think, is pretty good. They need Devontae Lampkin, another talented Texas recruit, to step up and be what they think he can be, because athletically he's a first-round draft choice. If he gets his weight in order and really gets after it, he can be as good as anybody in the country. So, and then Seibert's back for his junior year. They're bringing in a punter in Munden Chow, who I think will take over the punting duties. That will let Seibert just become the place kicker, and I think that will help OU. And OU will always have guys that can return punts and kicks. And I think getting Jeff Baddett at receiver to come in, a young man out of Kentucky that had 26 starts at Kentucky, played a lot against some of the best defenses the SEC had to offer, and he led the conference in long-distance catches. He's always been an outside receiver. He chose Oklahoma because they're going to teach him how to be an inside receiver too, which he wants to learn how to do that. And he's going to add a lot to a wide receiver core that there's a lot of questions. But, you've got CeeDee Lamb coming out of Texas, Charleston Rambo coming out of Texas. Both those guys had big-time careers down in the state of Texas in Texas high school football, and both are being counted on to play as freshmen. So I just think wide receivers will emerge. That seems to be always the case at OU. With Baker Mayfield throwing the ball to him too, that would be the benefit. And I think this team feels really confident as they go into the offseason.
Hey, the senior writer with OU Insider, James Hale, is with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're quickly running out of time. You've talked a lot about things offensively. I mean, is it going to have a different look when we talk about the Oklahoma Sooners next year?
Offense or defense?
Offense.
No, I think Lincoln Riley will still do the same things. I think now defense, they're going to the 4-3 base, but they'll still run some 3-4 a little bit. But offensively, Lincoln's going to his third year. He's just going to add to what he's doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Baker's back, so you want to take advantage of Baker's capabilities. Now, if Kyler Murray has to play quarterback, I think that changes it a little bit, because Kyler is such a great runner. I mean, he's a 4.38 guy.
Gosh,
wow. You just don't have that every day, right?
Right.
And every time he took off, I thought he could score in the spring game. They would just blow it dead, but it was 10 yards. And I think he can get 10 yards anytime he wants it.
And he's a baseball player too, right?
Yeah, he's a baseball player. He's not hitting very well, so he's primarily a guy that comes off the bench to pinch run. But I think his best sport's still going to be baseball in the long run. He just needs to really get some at-bats. And I don't know when he's going to be able to play summer ball. So, but he's really good. But, OU's going to go to that 4-3 base. They'll still work out of the 3-4 some on defense. And offensively, more of the same, which is a top-5 offense in the country.
Okay, getting ready to wrap it up with James Hale, senior writer with OU Insider. So what are your projections going into the 2017 season? This is going to be a top-4 team?
Yeah, I think it's a top-5 team going in. They've got that big game in Game 2 at Ohio State. That may be the biggest game, non-conference game.
There's September 9th, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one. They lost to Ohio State last year, but they've got that corner position solved, and Baker Mayfield is back. Now, they don't have D.D. Westbrook, but they didn't really have D.D. Westbrook in that game either. I mean, he was injured and banged up and wasn't at full speed. So, they've got – I think that's a huge game. OU's never lost there. The only time they lose to Ohio State's in Norman. They've been able to win it. Remember Uwe von Schaumann's big kick back in the 70s?
Oh, wow.
And by the way, pray for Uwe. He's fighting some form of cancer. He says he's going to have 6 to 8 weeks of chemo, but
okay.
He says that there's a 95 or a 90% chance that he'll be cured. So,
okay.
But it's still, that's not an easy thing. He's going to live. He might lose all that beautiful hair that he's got, though. He's worried about that. I think Oklahoma's pretty good. Yeah, really, really do. And I think that second game will tell you just how good. Oklahoma State feels like they're pretty good. Oklahoma's got to go to Stillwater this year, but that hasn't kept OU from winning there in the past. So, and we'll see what happens. But Oklahoma, they're the favorite to win the Big 12, and they're one of the favorites to win the national title.
Senior writer with OU Insider, James Hale. Check him out, OUinsider.com. Always a true pleasure. Thanks, James. We'll talk real soon. Thank you.
All righty. Have a great day.
You bet. Much more coming your way. And hour number two as we get ready to go inside the ropes with Larry Miller, PGA professional, after this quick commercial break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show on this Memorial Day weekend. In our next segment, hey, it is time to go inside the ropes like we do each and every week with PGA professional and author, I should say best-selling author, that is Larry Miller. It's always a true pleasure to have him back with us. Good evening, Larry.
Well, good evening, and wonderful to be with you again, and you're a great audience, too.
Well, I tell you what, you have had a very big week. You were in Memphis on Monday at a celebrity golf tournament, and which had a nice mixture of former NFL athletes and country music stars. Now, that's my kind of tournament I got to hang out at.
Yeah, there were a bunch of Hall of Fame songwriters here and performers and a lot of football coaches from around the country. And it's a great tournament. It's held every year here in Memphis at Tunica, one of the casino courses, and it benefits the Poor Clare Nuns, who just do tremendous work around the world.
Hey, Larry Miller with us inside the ropes at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We've got a lot of PGA news and notes that we're going to talk about. Of course, the historic Colonial Tournament is underway right now in Fort Worth, Texas. But let's do a recap of the Byron Nelson. Billy Horschel wins after the Jason Day miscue, and that was his first win for the first time in 3 years. So very happy for Billy, but I have to tell you, the golf gods, they were not too kind to Jason Day, and he's one of my favorite players.
Yeah, he's truly one of the truly nice guys out there on
Absolutely.
Tour. You could see when he hit that lady with the ball or near miss, and here he was right in contention for the tournament the last couple of holes, and he spent 5 minutes worrying about if she was okay and asking her over and over. I mean, that was pretty classy, you know, in the heat of what he was doing to be so concerned. That's the kind of guy he is. I was pulling for him. And he just, but you know what? That chip in that he had, he really stole a couple of shots on that shot. That was an unbelievably tough shot. He had a downhill ball below his feet lie on the side of a bunker, and it would have been great to get that shot within 15 feet of the hole, and he holed it out. So he really,
incredible.
You could say he really stole a couple of shots there, but still, he had a chance to win it, and that's just the way it goes. It always seems to come down to a putt, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And, of course, he missed that 4-foot putt for par that would have sent the tournament into the second playoff hole. When you watch the replay of that, did he just, miss a line or, did not read the break correctly?
I think it was just a very minute, mistake in the read of the green. It's amazing, it's amazing how many putts, it's almost as if the hole were a half inch larger, so many more putts would go in,
And that's the case, yeah.
But I mean, it just takes a minuscule mistake in reading the green, just a half inch or a quarter inch off, and you skirt the hole and miss it. It's very precise when you think about it, but Arnold Palmer said something one time. Some guy said, Arnie, what if the hole were 12 inches wide? Wouldn't that be great? We'd make all these putts and make all these birdies. You know what Arnie said? He said, but then instead of lipping out 8-footers, you'd be lipping out 30-footers and you'd still be aggravated.
Oh, that's so true.
It's all relative,
Absolutely. Hey, Larry Miller with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I wanted to bring up a stat that I saw, when we talk about Jason Day and him missing, that 4-foot putt.
Yeah.
He has made 278 of 291 putts inside 5 feet this season for 95%. So it was stunning, the fact that he wasn't able to capitalize on that from just 4 feet.
Yeah, and sometimes, too, the pressure, you get that little bit of increase in pressure in your grip, and a little bit more tension in your hands, and you just don't make as smooth a stroke as you normally would. And that's just enough to just miss it. And, again, it's a very sensitive, fragile thing. And when you've got a 4-footer under pressure like that, it's just not easy. You can imagine, if you're just playing for lunch money, it's tough enough, much less $1 million. So that all adds in. A little mistake in the read, a little bit of pressure, and that adds up to a slight miss. But no, since he's gone to that red mallet putter he uses, that TaylorMade putter, he has been putting extremely well, and he's got a great putting stroke.
What do you like about Billy Horschel's game? He hadn't been to the Byron Nelson in 5 years, and he putted. Speaking of putting, he made a putting putter change, and he putted beautifully all week long.
Yeah, putter. You know what I like about Billy is he's a good, aggressive, very aggressive player. He won in New Orleans, my hometown, 1 year at TPC. He won that tournament. I think might have been his last win, actually. And he's a very aggressive player. And sometimes a putter change can just shake things up, and all of a sudden you can go from putting poorly to putting spectacularly just with a putter change. It just is a whole different mindset. You know what it is? It gives you confidence, and putting's all about confidence. Mm-hmm. If you think you're going to make the putt, then you got a great chance of making it. But if you get that little bit of doubt in your mind, then you make a tentative stroke, and so the trick is to fool yourself into thinking you're going to make every putt, and that's what the great putters do.
And, of course, the title of your new book is Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. And there is a wonderful chapter completely that zeroes in on the key fundamentals to putting, right?
Yes. Hogan was not really renowned for putting. Although early in his career, some of his contemporaries told me he was a great putter, especially from inside 10 feet. But he had that horrific car accident in 47. And eventually it eroded the eyesight in his left eye, and that affected his putting greatly. And he actually became a very bad putter toward the end of his career. But, you know, his ball striking was so good that it's almost the opposite of some of today's players who miss 5, 6, 7 greens around but have 27 or 8 putts. Hogan would hit 16, 17 greens and have 34 putts. And so his great ball striking bailed him out. But there is a good chapter on putting, and there are some maxims that will help anybody with mm-hmm. their putting. You know, things like always play enough break. Most amateur players, you know, miss on the low side and don't play enough break. So play enough break and get the ball to the hole. Those are constants that will help anybody, really, if they keep those things in mind.
And I thought it was interesting, too, you talk about in the book that the best putters throughout history have all had different types of styles. But one thing that is a common denominator is you talk about they roll the ball, they don't hit it. Explain.
That's right. They put a good roll on the ball, smooth stroke, flowing, more like a pendulum. You don't see good putters chop at it. They have a flowing, smooth stroke, just like a pendulum. And a lot of players take the putter not back far enough on the backstroke, and so they take it back too short and then have to jab at it to accelerate the putter. It's better to have a longer stroke. And, you know, typically, theoretically, the best thing is for the length of the backstroke to equal the length of the through stroke. And if you do that, then you have a true pendulum motion, and then it's just a matter of reading the break. But anyway, there's some good tips on putting in that chapter, and that's where it's at. You know, from 100 yards in and around the green and on the green, that's where the scoring happens. And so that's where the focus should be on anyone's game when they practice.
So what is your routine as far as with putting? And just can you talk about the importance of finding the intermediate target that you were talking about, that amateurs, they don't play enough break. You want to be on the high side of the intermediate target.
Yeah, you know, you hear Johnny Miller sometimes talk about the fall line, you know, on putts. And what you try to do is you try to find the apex point. You look, get behind the ball in line with the hole, and you look at the putt, and you try to figure out, you know, where's the fall line? Where's the highest point that the ball is going to get to before it starts breaking toward the cup, if it's a breaking putt? And then you try to roll the ball over that apex point. You don't worry about the hole. The mistake a lot of players make is that they do all that, but then when they set up over the ball, they look at the hole inexplicably instead of looking at the apex point. And so what do? They wind up hitting the ball toward the hole and miss the point and then miss it on the low side. So you got to make sure that you look at that apex point and not the hole on your final look.
So how much should your speed be going towards the apex? I mean, should it be, and then it'll die out after that and fade?
Speed's a matter of touch, you know, and that's something that it's really hard to teach. A lot of people are born with great touch. You know, it's like pitching quarters to a line. Some people are really good at it, mm-hmm. Some don't get it very close, and it's a matter of touch. But you can improve your touch with drills. One great drill is to find about a 25-foot putt that's downhill, and you go back and forth. You putt it downhill, then you turn around and putt it back uphill. You keep doing that. That's a great speed control distance control drill for putting.
Hey, we are inside the ropes breaking down the PGA news and notes and the historic Colonial taking place right now in Fort Worth with PGA professional Larry Miller. We're going to step aside for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, we are back at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Hey, Larry Miller back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we are inside the ropes. PGA professional and best-selling author, his latest book that he has just released, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. You know, speaking of putting, one of the pros that I wanted to zero in on who is struggling right now, and that is Jordan Spieth. I mean, he didn't even make the cut last week at the Byron Nelson. Can you kind of give us an assessment of his game, where it is at? You had even mentioned just briefly on our show last week that you perhaps even see a swing flaw. What is it showing you right now?
Yeah, you know, Jordan relies on timing in his swing, and he, in my opinion, he needs to make a few small mechanical changes to his golf swing to get it more on the track that Hogan talks about. You know, what my book is about, it's about the basic geometry, the basic structure of the golf swing that Hogan discovered, and the better you can get to adhere to those lines that he talks about, then the more mechanically sound you're going to be and the less reliant on timing and adjustments you're going to be. And right now, Jordan is not on track on those lines, and so he has to make in-swing adjustments. And when you do that, you rely strictly on timing. So if your timing's off, the adjustments are hit or miss, and you don't strike the ball very well. And that's what he's going through right now. I think he needs to step back and try to get his swing a little bit more mechanically sound, if you will, along the lines that Hogan talks about. And once he does that, because he's got the mind of a winner, obviously. Normally his putting is stellar. But I think that his inferior ball striking right now at the moment is affecting his putting. I know a lot of players, when they are striking the ball well, they putt better. It's just a confidence thing. And I think once his ball striking improves, he'll start putting like a wizard again. But he is going to have to make a few changes because he does have some things about his swing that he needs to fix.
We are inside the ropes with Larry Miller tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Join us each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 Eastern Time, and we'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at eRadioSports. And, of course, all of our guests tonight, you can go to podcastarena.com, and go back and listen to our interview. Let's relive some memories. I mean, Larry, take us down memory lane as far as what was that first tournament that you played in as a PGA professional? We were just talking about your confidence level. What was your confidence level and comfort level going into that first big event? I'm excited to hear about it.
Well, when you hear this story and your listeners hear this story, you know, you're going to get a little bit of a laugh.
Okay, here
I am in Orlando, Florida at the Citrus Invitational at Rio Pinar Country Club. That was the forerunner of the Bay Hill, what is now the Bay Hill Classic, Palmers Tournament.
Yeah.
So now visualize, this is my first tournament on the tour, okay, my first start. And Arnold Palmer had happened to have just won the, I believe it was Athlete of the Year or Decade or something like that. And he had to accept the award in New York. Well, you know, my first tournament, you know, I'm a rookie and, you know, I'm a nobody and I've got like a 7:40 tee time, you know, with a couple of guys. And Palmer, of course, you know, he's got a one something tee time, but he's got to accept this award in New York. So he asked the tournament officials to give him an early start so he can finish and fly up to New York to get this award that evening. So what happens? He gets 7:50 time right behind me in my group. So here I am in my first tournament. And I'm teeing off knowing that behind me is Arnold Palmer. So every green that I come to has got 10,000 people around the green. Here I am in my first tournament. So, I mean, I'm like, you know. And then half the time, myself and my playing partners, we're not only, like, traumatized by the crowd that we're not used to, but we've also find ourselves looking back all the time, watching Arnie, you know, as if we're a spectator because we're in awe. You know, this is our hero. And, I mean, it was just unbelievable. It was traumatizing. And anyway, so this is a great part of the story. I come to the 15th hole, and I'm like three over par or something, you know, and just, you know, in shambles, you know, and it's a par five, and I have about a 70-yard sand wedge for my third shot. And there's 10,000 people around the green. They're all waiting for Arnie, talking and chattering while we're hitting. Well, I hit this sand wedge about 8 feet past the hole. It spins back to within inches of the cup, and the crowd just goes nuts, screaming. You know, they thought it was going in. And the hair on my arm stood up. I mean, it was like electric, because I'd never experienced that before, that many people cheering that loud, you know, for me, for my shot, because they were waiting for Arnie. So, you know, I tapped it in for birdie. I ended up shooting, I think, 74 or 5. But anyway, that night at dinner, my roommate and I were talking, and all of a sudden the realization hit me. I said, Bob Lewis, who became a Walker Cup captain, I said, Bob, do you realize that Arnie gets that feeling almost on every hole that he plays? And, I mean, you think that doesn't, the adrenaline gets the adrenaline going and gets you juiced up. And it was just amazing experience to happen to me in my first tournament. So that was a great story, one of my favorite stories from my my tour experience.
And you can certainly see why it's so addictive, right, you know, when you experience that adrenaline rush.
I wanted to experience that again, but
you
know what? I couldn't find 10,000 people to watch.
Hey, the great Larry Miller has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Great way to close out our Memorial Day weekend show. Thank you so much, Larry. Blessings, and we look forward to another conversation next week. And safe travels.
Great. Same. Thank you.
You bet. Much more coming your way right here at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. That, of course, was Larry Miller, PGA professional and author of his new book, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. Larry joins us each and every week right here at SB Nation Radio as we go inside the ropes. A special thank you to all of our amazing guests, and we'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Don't drink and drive.